Welcome. You are listening to Evolver Planet Radio. Welcome. You're listening to Evolver Planet Radio. What is up, Evolver Planet? Welcome to the show. I am your host, Jonah Bolt, and joining us on the show also tonight is Wendy. She'll be joining us in a few minutes. Today is Friday, November 18, 2011, and Evolver Planet Radio is brought to you in part by Helixilae.com, the new interactive Flower of Life board game. Check out Helixilae.com. And on the show tonight, we have joining us the up-and-coming music artist is Pope McElvey. And also on the second half of the show, we're going to have Antonio Lopez, who has done some articles for Reality Sandwich and is an awesome, awesome contributor. So we're very fortunate to have him on the show. He's joining us from Italy, all the way from Italy. So that's the second half of the show. And with that, we're going to jump right into the music artist of the week, and that is Pope McElvey for Harmony. HarmonyGlobally.org, excuse me. And Pope, you on the air?
I am
Pope,
here.
Can you hear me? Oh, there you go. All right.
I'm
well,
here.
Thank you for joining us. All right.
You're welcome.
Cool.
Glad to be here, Jonah.
Yeah, let's jump into your music because you are the music artist of the week and your music ties so much into Evolver, what's happening, the shift of consciousness, 2012. So let's take it back some time for the listeners and just give us a background of who you are and how you came up to the music you're producing today.
Well, I've been around music for an awful lot as an artist for a very long time, and interestingly I actually started playing when I was in college. My idols were people like Bob Dylan, who I guess what he talked about in his songs is something that stuck with me because I wrote protest songs for many years, and now I've moved more in the direction of music that talks about where we are as humanity and on this planet at this time. And I want to say quickly that my playing partner, Robert Akers, it couldn't be on the interview today. Robert and I play together on all of the music that we produce and that we record, and we're both in the same place in terms of what we're doing and what we're creating. So a lot of years, I'm 68 years old. I've been playing since I was a college sophomore, so that's a long time ago, brother. But I feel great about what I'm doing now. I feel great about the fact that I'm able to share a message about consciousness, awareness, about the fact that it's not all negative out there. I mean, I know it feels negative. There's so many things going on that look horrible to all of us, you know, whether it be war or whether it be what's going on in our financial system and the collapse of our economy and so forth. So many people are being hurt. But, you know, in a sense, I'm optimistic about it, and that's what I write about, optimism. Jonah? Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm here. And we've talked. Now I'm cutting out. So we've talked about this before, just like you said, and all the depressive or negative things, to me, are the good signs that things are changing in this world, and it gives us a chance to change the situation by bringing all this stuff to light. Because the more aware that people are of the negative things that are going on, the more Occupy Wall Street will grow, the more things will grow into a better way of living, and I firmly believe that. Same thing with like how your music has changed and morphed over the years into to more enlightenment, more awakening music. And getting into that, when was the big changeover for you, Pope, when you sort of had like your own awakening or were awakened to, a different way of being?
Well, Well, I've been involved since the early 70s in spirituality. I'm certainly not a religious person. I have no interest in, and I hope I don't insult any of your listeners, but I personally think religion is one of the great destroyers, if you will, of human beings and anything good on our planet. Oh, that's a terrible thing to say, isn't it, Jonah? Can I say that to your audience?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You can say it. It's an
good,
open format.
Because I just did. But I've been involved in spirituality and in consciousness and in working in that arena since the early 70s. And I guess it was then, really, when I first started taking an interest in music that was more conscious, more aware. Finally, I guess it was not that many years ago that my wife said to me one day, "You keep singing all these songs, but you know they're not your. There's no, you don't have. It's not your message. It's not what's coming from you. So why don't you stop all of that and just dedicate yourself to writing music that means something to you?" And I guess that was probably around 2005 or six. When I started writing that kind of music, and now that's basically all I write and all I play.
Excellent. And
I think we've got to put a positive message out there, Jonah. And you know, there's plenty of negative, but I said for years that we were in such terrible shape as a world in the way that things had developed in terms of who was controlling things. And you know, to me, there shouldn't be a single person that goes hungry in this world. Why is that happening? Okay, aren't we all human beings? Aren't we all here to help each other, to serve each other? You know, I'm not saying that everyone should live in a palace, but at least have the basic necessities to survive. Who are we if we're not at least good enough to take care of each other? And so I thought, for a long time, that the only way that anything would change was that if we had a complete and total collapse of everything. Mm-hmm. And that basically we almost had to go back to the Stone Age, not quite, but, you know, certainly we wouldn't have our television sets and our cell phones, but that we would be in a situation where everything was in such a total state of collapse that we had to rebuild it. And because we were so dependent on each other for our survival, that we would rebuild it in a different model than we have right now. But I think that that's not necessary anymore. And as I look at things like the Occupy movement, not only in Wall Street but across this country and now throughout the world, and that's only going to grow great, bigger, stronger. It gives me hope that. We can do this without it being quite as terrible as a total collapse. There's going to be some collapse, but hopefully not a total collapse, so that people don't have to suffer quite as much as they would otherwise. So my music is about loving each other, creating more harmony in the world, and that's also why we created this organization called Harmony Globally, which I hope your listeners will check us out on the web at harmonyglobally.org. Subscribe to our newsletter. There's no charge for any of that. We just welcome them to be a part of what we're doing, bringing more harmony to the world. And our music is a part of that. And we're working on a CD project now so that will be available through our website as well. And we want everybody to stay on, you know, keep in touch with us through that means.
Absolutely, and like you said, just touching on the Occupy Wall Street movement again and how it's grown and just to see like how the powers that be in this country are really, you know, cracking down and cracking down freedom of speech and things like that. Music is so important, especially in these times, because music is a path to the heart, is a sound for the soul. I mean, music can just change everything just by tuning into that frequency and vibration. And especially in times like this, with everything going around and occupying and how people are being treated, music is very important, especially in these times, because music is just, it's helpful, it's healing. And your music especially has such a strong message about the shift and what's going on that that it's awesome. So I can't wait to hear the album once it comes out. And you'll be able to get that off the website. You'll have information on there.
Yeah, we'll have information about how they can download individual songs or the entire album, and hopefully that's going to happen pretty soon.
And what about any upcoming events or shows you guys are doing, or any benefits or concerts you have planned? What are some future plans that you guys are thinking of doing?
Well, we, part of Harmony Globally is one of the ways that we bring people together, and that's the purpose of that, of our organization, is really to bring people together who are interested in joining with others to create more harmony, more compassion, more peace on our planet. One of the ways that we do that is through concerts. And the model that we're creating for this, and our organization is fledgling right now. We're very new. We've only been in existence for less than a year, probably really in terms of putting it out there to people for about 6 months. But we're doing local concerts here in Asheville where we bring together musicians and of course, myself and my playing partner, Robert, always play, where we're singing a lot of, where the artists that are there are doing positive music, a lot of original music, but even some old, you know, they're covering some music that is really positive and uplifting. Not, you know, not church music. I definitely want to make sure everybody knows that. I mean, we've got everything from rock and roll to jazz to rhythm to R&B to the blues, I mean, folk, everything at these concerts. And what we'd like to do, our vision, is that these concerts are happening all over. Sorry about that, somebody trying to call in. These concerts are happening all over the world, literally. We want to chapters of our Harmony Globally organization that we established throughout the world, and one of the things that these chapters would do to bring is to bring people together through music.
Wow, that's awesome, because that is one of the best ways, if not the best ways, to really express how everyone is really feeling through these times of change is through music. So to have a global network of musicians that are consciously expressing themselves about the shift and what's going on, expressing truth, is very, very powerful. As yes. Every indigenous tribe on the planet has had drum circles and dances and rhythmic vibrations to tap in, if you will, to the higher states of consciousness. And it's so important to be doing that now. So that's an awesome, awesome organization.
And, yeah, and what we're trying to do is to motivate people to be the change, as Gandhi says. You know, to not just talk about it, not just believe in it, but be the change. Look for ways that you can make a difference right now. I there's a song that is going to be on the CD called "Pave the Way," which talks about how we can pave the way to the change that we all want in the world by being loving, by being joyful, by being hopeful, by being being peaceful every day, and just by doing those things. I mean, we don't have to be great scientists or great inventors or whatever to make a difference on the planet. We can make a difference every single day, in every single moment, in every interaction that we have with anyone, just by coming from our hearts, by being loving, by being compassionate, by doing what we can to help another person. And, you know, that's what we're about, and that's what we want people to tap into through our organization, is just to be aware of that and conscious of it.
Absolutely. And talking about, like, your awakening, and you said you've been spiritually since the 70s. How have you seen the spiritual community shift over those years? Because someone like myself, who is newly awakened to a lot of the truths and the way conscious evolution is manifesting right now, with only a couple of years, being someone who's been holding light for so long and awakened for so long, how have you seen this shift, you know, the last couple of years from once, you know, you first started paying attention to spiritual realities, sort of say, back in the 70s?
Well, it has just expanded exponentially throughout the world, for one thing. A good sign is that religions are losing their power. They're losing their numbers, the people. People are less and less interested in religion and more interested in finding something that's real in their lives that is really going to make a difference in their life right here, right now, not in buying into some fairy tale about, what happens to you if you don't live by some set of rules that somebody made up, okay? So people are rejecting that, and they're rejecting it in larger and larger numbers, and they're moving much more towards the idea that I am responsible for myself, that what I do right now in this present moment is what matters, and that I have a responsibility not just to myself, but I have a responsibility as a citizen of this planet to do anything that I can within my power to help other people. And to me, that's a movement towards spirituality. And I see it everywhere. I mean, anyone you talk to just about nowadays has had some sort of an awakening that is moving them more in that direction because they're looking for something that is real and makes a difference in their lives. When I started looking at all of this in the early 70s, the numbers were small. I mean, we were considered to be sort of outcasts, really, because, we had moved away from traditional religion towards examining ourselves and who we were and moving more towards our spirituality. And a lot of people thought we were kind of crazy, really. I mean, and many people were rejected by their families and friends who thought that they'd gone off the deep end. But nowadays, it's kind of commonplace. That's who a lot of people are now. So maybe it's because I'm living in Asheville, North Carolina, which is probably one of the most spiritually advanced places I've ever been.
Yeah, that could be it.
Yeah.
It's definitely a very enlightened community. It's amazing. I'm just fortunate to even be up here. It's such good people, and you can talk about anything with almost anybody here.
Yeah.
It's a very good community. And just before we go, the last thing I want to touch on is something that you brought up, and I know something you're involved in now, and this is a new sort of an aid, if you will, to possibly help us during this shift of consciousness, and this is laminite. And, Goofy, tell us just about laminite and how it's been affecting people and how it's helping people.
Well, I know we're nearing the end of the program, so I won't get into a long explanation of it, but I will say this, that it is something that is quite unique. It is a supplement that you take in a capsule form that actually is an extract from a 9-day-old fertilized hen egg. What the research has found is that exactly on the 9th day, all the growth factors are at their absolute peak, so that from the 10th day on, all of the parts of a chicken are being developed, the beak, the feathers, the organs, and so forth. But on the 9th day, all the cells that are going to then produce all of that are at their absolute peak. So the scientists have found that they can extract that and put it in a capsule, and we can take it into our bodies and have literally miraculous things happen. These growth factors find whatever is out of balance in our body, and they start correcting them, and they do it fast. Usually within a couple of days, people notice a difference in whatever health challenges they have. Everything from sleep disorders that will usually correct within 1 or 2 days, to depression. People come out of depression in a couple of days. People who are diabetic, their blood sugars drop into the normal level and stay there. People who have low libido, suddenly their libido increases. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's across the board. So if any of your listeners would like to know more about it, they can. We do have a website called, and it's at Laminines, that's spelled laminines.com/TOL. That's really important, that last part, T-O-L, Tom Oliver Larry, T-O-L. So it's laminines.com/TOL, or they can send me an email. I'll be glad to send them information. They can send it to feeljoynow@gmail.com, feeljoynow@gmail.com. Jonah, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to mention that, because we need support from a physical standpoint. We are so under the control in this country and throughout the world, the pharmaceutical industry, the agricultural industry that is feeding us food that is what I call Frankenfood, the medical industry that just wants to cut us open or give us drugs. We need to have ways that allows our body to heal itself, and that's what Laminine does, and I'm very, very proud to be able to share that information with your listeners. Thank you.
Absolutely. That's what's up. And as Evolver and Evolver Planet is evolving, so is everyone's consciousness. And it's such an important time to pay attention to these energies. And if there is something out there that can better help your physical stance, because we're chemically poisoned by fluoride in the water, GMOs in the food, chemtrails in the sky, I mean, you name it, you know, it's being given to us right now. So check out the website, definitely, because I've heard nothing but good things about that. So definitely, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you,
and,
Jonah.
Yeah, with that, Pope, thank you for coming to the show. And we're going to play one of your new tracks off the new album you're working on. And we'll play another track at the end of the show. And, we'll have your information up on the website, evolverplanetradio.com. And with that, Pope, thank you for so much for joining us. And here's a track from Pope's new album.
In a time of chaos and confusion, against tyranny a voice did ring, and all the might of the British Empire, Gandhi's voice could not contain, 'cause he said, I'm gonna be the see. A loving heart's the truest wisdom, and kindness is the greatest philosophy. It's said that things don't change, only we do. And metamorphosis begins with me. So you know I'm gonna be the change. Oh yeah, I'm gonna be the change. A world built on peace and understanding, that's tolerant of different points of view. Well, it has to be just imagine. Sorry, John. to manifest through me and you. We gotta take one more step. We gotta be the change. Oh yeah, we gotta be the change. Oh yeah, we gotta be the change. Oh, that we wish to see. To see.
All right. And welcome back. You're listening to Evolver Planet Radio, and that was a track off Pope McElvey's new album that's coming out. And we'll try to play another one of his tracks at the end of the show. But joining us now on the show is Antonio Lopez, all the way from Italy, and a big contributor to the Reality Sandwich and Evolver community. Antonio, you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Welcome.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the show. And first, I want to start off by talking about one of your biggest articles, or one of the most popular articles, I should say, on the Reality Sandwich, which was the Poverty Unconsciousness article. And let's go into a little bit about what that article represented and how it became to be on Reality Sandwich.
Well, it's interesting the way that article came about, because you may have heard of a phenomenon called Blog Action Day. And every year they choose a subject where they ask bloggers to write about a particular topic. And so every year I take it upon myself to, because I have my own personal blog, to run with the idea. And the topic for discussion was poverty, which bloggers from all over the world wrote about. And so I decided to look at it from a different kind of angle than I think most people wrote in Evolver, Reality Sandwich, being a community of enlightened thinkers. I wanted to look at it from a more spiritual point of view, whereas I think the more traditional bloggers were approaching it from a political point of view. And so what I decided to do was approach the topic from some of my own personal experience and to see how it is that our attitudes affect poverty, not just necessarily political systems, although I think the political system certainly reflects a spiritual belief.
Absolutely, and because the thinking just itself manifesting our reality. So if you have a generation or a way that Americans sort of say they think prosperity is a certain way, which is materialism or something like that, versus like what you said would being grateful just for what we have, once you have that in play, nothing can really change. You have to be either one or the other, and the whole society is shaped for us to think that materialism and all that, we want to keep getting more. You want the nicer car and the bigger house, rather than teaching people to be grateful just for what we have, like you talked on the article. Until that really changes, it's going to continue to be that way, I think. And what is a way that you think we could start to help change the reality, really, of how society is shaped?
Well, I go back to some lessons I learned by participating in a Buddhist sangha. When I was in New York, I was part of the Dharma Punks group. And I mean, I guess I still am in my attitude. I'm just not there physically. And one of the things I learned was that in Buddhist practice, when you start doing the loving kindness meditation, which is to project not only love to yourself, but to other people unconditionally, I learned that one of the ways to cultivate that is to actually volunteer or to give. So I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and there's a lot, I'm a media scholar mostly, so that particular piece that you're talking about is not normally the kind of thing I write about, but it's something I care about deeply. One of the things that is discussed often in people who are looking at media is the rise in participatory culture, which is the kinds of things that people do with Web 2.0. It's a lot of sharing, people sharing stuff on the web, peer-to-peer networks, things like that. And so I was trying to look at that phenomena as being something that maybe is inherently human, but also a way out of the trap of selfish capitalism that we've come to grow up in. So maybe by drawing attention to the fact that people in their daily practices now with the internet are constantly giving stuff to each other back and forth, and drawing attention to that would be one good way of doing that. And also just encouraging people to do some kind of act of either volunteer or giving, and to pay attention to the quality of that feeling. I also am a professor at a university, and I work with undergraduate students. And yesterday during class, I was talking to students about experimenting by giving a stranger some money that with no expectations, and to pay attention to their feelings. Like, what happens when they experience giving money to someone that they don't know? And I don't mean just like 1 or 2 euros, but, like 10 euros or 20 euros. And really explore that feeling. Personally, when I've had that experience, it's been very powerful, And people sometimes cry, It's like, it's pretty intense, actually.
Yeah, I can relate to that. It's sort of the pay it forward concept. And I've just naturally done that my whole life. If I see someone in need or someone who I think, or sometimes just a gut feeling will tell me, just to give them a 5 or 10 or a bag boy at a grocery store, $5, just the gratitude is amazing, and the energy you get back from that. So volunteering and everything is very important. And I know you have a lot of different articles on Reality Sandwich. Another one that I was personally interested in, and we'll change the topic a little bit, is the avatar downloading our higher selves. And this one sort of took a sort of outside perspective of our higher selves looking down, sort of like James Cameron was talking about. Tell us about how you came about writing that article.
Well, that article actually was inspired first by an essay I read by an art critic named William Mitchell. I think William was his first name. And he talks about the idea of what do pictures want. When he says pictures, he's talking about paintings or works of art, but even media or film as well. And so I was really struck in Avatar how the first scene of the film is the character who's the hero of the film. And we see his eyes open at the beginning, but he's kind of a broken character. He's sort of typical of the hero's journey. His world is upside down. Literally, he's upside down in the first shot. And the whole purpose of the film is for him to restore the symbolic order. That's sort of a classic Joseph Campbell, storyline for hero's journey. And at the very end, we see him transformed as like a shaman, as a hybrid animal, and also technological hybrid, because in order for him to become this shamanic character, he had to enter into that world through technology. So, those things got me thinking, and then I was trying to figure out, well, what does this film really want? What is it asking me? Let's say the film is really alive. So I kept asking myself this question. And at the time I was writing it, I was reading a lot of eco-psychology and a lot of critics of technology, they have a tendency to basically say, well, if it's technological, it must be bad. You know, there's no possible way that it could have any kind of sustainable or ecological substance because its product is born of original sin, if I will. You know, that because it was made by Hollywood, how could it be of any use? Because it's a culture industry product. So in the article, I addressed those, and I said, yes, it's true. It is a culture industry product. There are several problems with it. I acknowledge those problems. Yet, it was still speaking to a higher truth. Even if it was using, like, one of the criticisms of the film is that it uses stereotypical caricatures that are the kind that you would find in of Native Americans. And that's obvious, and I agree that that's problematic. But at the same time, I thought that it was a strategy so that this very simple allegory about the exploitation of nature by corporations would be digestible, that people would understand it. And it had actually a higher spiritual purpose, I believe, that transcended the normal economic imperatives of the culture industry. And my evidence for that is the kind of response that people had to the movie. I mean, for one, it grossed over $1 billion, which no film has ever done.
Oh, yeah.
And then also you saw just how people responded on the internet. You know, people say that the Na'vi were their true selves. And so I think it spoke to a deeper level of consciousness on a mythological scale that is not addressed by the current reality. And it broke through somehow. And my other evidence for this, which I have seen since the article came out, are different activist groups that have actually taken the symbols of the Na'vi and incorporated it into their struggles, like such as there's an indigenous group in India that wrote a letter to James Cameron, they ran an ad, and activists dressed like Na'vi in front of the corporation's headquarters in London to draw attention to their plight. And people all of a sudden, it wasn't an abstract concept for like the Westerners think, oh, it's just another tribal conflict somewhere off in India, but that it had some kind of symbolic resonance and that the film had created that. So I think in that sense, the film downloaded the higher self of Earth to the planetary symbolic sphere or the semiosphere, that some people use this term, but it grounded a certain reality back into a discussion that had been lost. And it's, I think, something that has to be foregrounded much more. I mean, the plight of Earth is completely ignored by the media, so it has to be brought in some way or another, and I think the film did that job very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I for another radio show I do, was trying to get James Cameron on and did a lot of research on a lot of his interviews on the movie. And what I found was all his mainstream interviews that he did with like a CNN or LA Times, he never brought up the word consciousness or anything like that. All of his blog interviews, I found two or three of them that he specifically said, Cameron, that he waited 15 years to do this film and that he knew that this film was his quote-unquote newly found mission to raise consciousness. And so I believe he's very well awakened, and that was his intent of the film. As I found, he even said himself in a couple of the blog interviews he did, but nothing mainstream, still because spirituality and a lot of the stuff we talk about and feel and express is still shunned upon to the mainstream. So Cameron, although he's awakened, he's very careful with what interviews he says what, as I found in reading some of this stuff. And that's an awesome explanation of looking at it. And with that, you mentioned the corporations, and one of the things obviously everyone's talking about now is the Occupy movement and what's going on. And I know that a few weeks ago there was a huge rally in Italy. What's going on with the Occupy movement in Italy, and what are your personal feelings on it, and you know, your gut instinct to if this is awakening, or you know, what do you feel on the subject?
Well, absolutely, it's an awakening. I mean, it's. I was just thinking about this today because I've been following through the internet all the things that were going on yesterday in New York City. And I had a bit of an epiphany. I realized that people were committing civil disobedience against banks and corporations. And I don't know if that's happened before. You know, people have had civil disobedience against colonial rule, against laws, you know, like the civil rights movement. But a civil rights movement against corporations, I know it's expressed itself in different ways for many years. You know, it's not a new concept, but for it to resonate so strongly, I think goes to show that people are just, I think that they've pushed everyone too far to the edge. Now, in terms of what's happening in Italy, it's a very complicated situation, and, you know, we're at the nexus of all the problems that are happening, and I think basically the feeling is that Europe will live or die by what happens in Italy. So we're sort of, it's not going to be Greece, it's going to be what happens in Italy, because we have the biggest economy, or the third biggest economy in Europe. Now, there was initially an occupation movement in Rome, and it was very peaceful. It was it had some strength and some momentum, which people liked. And then on October 15th, there was this sort of international solidarity marches for Occupied Wall Street that happened all over the world, which I went to, and at the beginning it was amazing. It was just hundreds of thousands of people. It was huge. The energy was really great. I was feeling sort of like something very positive. And then I saw enter into the crowd literally dozens of very well-organized black bloc. I don't know. I don't want to call them anarchists because I don't know what they are. But they were, they just sort of came from everywhere. And at that moment, I've been around long enough. I was a student at Berkeley in the 80s, and I saw a lot of this kind of stuff before. I was with some friends. We sort of agreed that something probably not good was about to happen. So we left, and we were trying to leave, but the police had cordoned off all the side streets. So there actually wasn't a way for us to leave the demonstration from the side. So we had to go backwards, which was very difficult. And we finally did leave. But literally 15 minutes after we left, these groups went into battle with the police. And there were hundreds of them. They cut the demonstration in half. And it was huge. It was violent. It was intense. It was urban warfare. These people, these infiltrators or insurgents, I don't know what you want to call them, were very well prepared. They were trained. They had stashes all over the place, and they were very destructive. I know people live in some of the neighborhoods where they were. They just destroyed everything. And yeah, at the end of the day, I'm sorry,
go ahead.
At the end of the day, I felt like essentially that this group sabotaged the Occupy movement, because I think what was going to happen was that this march was supposed to end at a certain place and that the people were just going to stay. It was in front of a big church, and it was going to be sort of like a way to establish some ground and to have stake a position. But this group of insurgents cut everyone in half. It broke up the momentum. It created this huge violence, and the police attacked. And then there was this big police crackdown for a few weeks after, and people getting raided. And, the mayor of Rome, who is a fascist, I say that literally, I'm not figuratively, he declared no more marches. You know, so it created a crackdown. So it made me very suspicious. Like, there was something perfect about how the violence basically disrupted and prevented a nonviolent sort of occupy movement from actually taking hold. And so it's hard for me to understand what the situation is. I mean, it's people agree that whoever did it, they were prepared and that they were trained somewhere somehow. Some say that they were actually were protesters and they were trained in Greece. A lot of the people that were arrested were young, they were minors. So it's hard to say, but I feel like the energy was just destroyed. It was very negative. I don't feel positive about what happened, and a lot of people don't either. So I hope something good happened.
Yeah, I remember a few weeks ago when I was reporting about some other show that I do, a radio show, and I go over the news that the videos, it was like Rome was, you know, burning, it was on fire, and these anarchists or whatever you want to call them were everywhere. And from what I've seen a lot here in the States, it's been shown and proven on a lot of videos that a lot of these quote-unquote insurgents or whatever are actually infiltrators of the police that were dressed in all black. This happened in multiple Occupies here in the States where the protesters were like, stop breaking the ATMs and stop throwing paint. And these guys were just like, showed up dressed in black, started trashing, breaking things. And all the protesters were against that. It's a peaceful movement. And it sounds like that's what the same thing happened in Italy. And, you know, governments are known to do that. So who really knows? But it definitely is not the correct energy that we're projecting. It's not violence. It's to protest it peacefully. That's the only way to do it. And I also know that... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that it was unfortunate because Italy was the only place in the world where this kind of thing happened. So, you know, we are infamous in a bad sort of way.
Yeah. There's been quite a few protests the last couple of years over in that region, for sure. but to have hundreds of thousands of people turn out for Occupy is amazing. I can only wish that happens in Manhattan, where we only have like 10,000-20,000 at its peak. But the masses are waking up. I truly believe that for sure.
Now, well, also, you know, one thing, just to follow up, one thing that is different about being in Italy than in the States is that the unions here are very strong. So one thing that's going on continuously every week, there's strikes all the time, and so there's a lot of disruptions. So this is just becoming part of daily life, and I imagine that it's going to get actually much worse once they start implementing the austerity measures. I think it's going to just be complete chaos.
Yeah, don't even get me started with that, because the draconian austerity measures I've been talking about since I even found out what those are that they're implementing here in the U.S. now, I mean, they're implementing those austerity measures all over the world, and basically what they do is, you know, they bail countries out, but then they impose these austerity measures which basically does not even allow them to pay them back and cripples the economy more than anything of helping it. And there's all sorts of austerity measures being pushed on the people. So it's definitely not a good situation, but I truly believe that people like us who are spreading truth and light will prevail. After, you know, it gets bad enough or worse enough where everyone comes together and says, this is it, enough with this system, it's time for a change.
Yeah, and I think that the Occupy movement just goes to show that people are conscious. And, you know, one of the things that I find interesting is, I don't know if you've read the coming insurrection by the Invisible Committee, but this manifesto was written like 4 or 5 years ago, and it was mostly a response to the riots in Paris, but it basically predicts what's happening right now. One of the things it argues is that what has to happen is that people have to come in contact with reality. And the thing that I like about the Occupy movement, which I think has made it successful, is, if you will, the repurposing of reality, you know, that they actually went into physical space, they met face-to-face with each other, started talking, and these ideas, like, we are the 1%, or I mean, we are the 99%, comes out of these kind of discussions. It's like collective intelligence in action, and also diversity in action, and the way that, from just my background in sustainability, it's just been proven over and over again that the best way to solve problems is you need to have diverse people working together and things emerge, you know, solutions emerge. And I think the internet is good for that, but it also needs to be hybridized with local spaces. It can't just be in cyberspace. It has to be grounded in the physical space. So this globalization of, you know, a global idea, which inspired by North Africa, which is another thing that in Italy we've been sort of in touch with in a closer way because of all the refugees from these different conflicts, has inspired a lot of people in a beautiful way. And that has been through the media, which extends our empathy, and that is a good thing. But empathy alone is not enough. You know, you have to take action. So the fact that people have been inspired by these different movements and people standing up for themselves, and, you know, you hear the kind of things that they said in Egypt and Libya, Tunisia, saying, you know, I feel like a man again. I feel like I'm a person. And people probably have been so dehumanized that they weren't even aware. You know, I'm talking about America now or Europe, but they're not even aware that they've been dehumanized.
Yeah.
By now, the glue that held everything somewhat together for the Americans and for the Europeans, now that that's disintegrating and that the society's structures are starting to come apart and that we're starting to turn into third world countries, people are finally acknowledging that the system has been dehumanizing for them and they're not benefiting from it. And so this idea that 99% really resonates. And I think that's brilliant. I mean, just like, you know, I hate to say it's marketing, but, you know, it's just like, boom. It's like a nuclear missile to the zeitgeist. It just explodes in your mind.
Absolutely. And that being a good thing, absolutely. And before we go, Antonio, I just want to give out also some other things that you're involved in, which is your worldbridgemedia.com. And what that is sustainability media, empowerment and collaboration for youth media and health projects, stressing multicultural strategies for critical viewing, self-esteem arts community, prevention, and ecology. And you also have a new book out, Media Ecology, and that's available on Amazon. Quickly tell us about that book.
Yes, Media Ecology, it's actually, I know it says it's new on my website, but it's been out for a few years. It's about, it's written for media educators. That's my main field of expertise. Media literacy is my background. And so that book was a critique of traditional media literacy practices. I worked many years with Native Americans and Afro-Caribbeans and Latino youth. And so I was trying to bring my insights from working in multicultural environments to a movement that's largely white and out of touch with those kinds of cultural perspectives. So try to bridge thinking about media literacy with ecology and sustainability, and you'd be surprised how few people actually think about these things as connected. So this is my big battle at the moment. I go to conferences, I write papers, and I advocate within my own professional community to try to get them to put sustainability into media education, and it's a real struggle. I just wanted to give everyone a heads up that I am writing a manifesto as part of the Evolver series, and it'll be published hopefully in June. I can't tell you the title of it yet because we're still hammering that out. But the book is basically done, and it covers a lot of what we talked about today. And so the thinking is very updated and talks
awesome.
A little bit about occupied movement. It's a short book, 140 pages. So I think that it will be probably a good read for the listeners of this show.
Nice. Awesome. And with that, Antonio Lopez, all the way from Italy, thank you so much for joining us and spreading some truth at the Evolver Planet Radio Network. And, of course, check out worldbridgemedia.com and look out for Antonio's new book coming out as part of the Evolver edition. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Antonio.
All right, thank you. It's great to have you.
And we'll speak to you soon. And with that, we're going to end. Coming up next week, we got Darren Darda coming on, December 2nd, Stephanie South, all the way from Australia. And then December 9th, we got Joe Moore coming on, and we're going to have some more Sports City updates, Boulder, Colorado. We got Long Beach coming up. throughout over the next couple of weeks. And, of course, don't forget Evolver Planet Radio is brought to you in part by Helixilae.com, the new interactive Flower of Life board game. Check out Helixilae.com. That's a new multifaceted game of discovery based on the ancient geometry known as the Flower of Life. And with that, we're going to play another track from Pope McElvey's new album coming out in Evolver Planet Radio. We will speak to you next week.
Difference you make in this place? Will your life be everything it could be? Or will you be dazzled by the chase? Will you share all the gifts you've been given? They are not yours to keep, no. You are here to make a difference with your life now, not to be just one of the sheep, no. In the blink of an eye, you are here and then you're gone. There is no time to waste, no. Change the world with your heart song. And remember to play after every storm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Remember to play after every storm. If you are looking to the future for some magic, you are missing all the wonder in this now. There is nothing else but this moment, so make the most of it somehow, somehow. You must be the change you are seeking. There is no other way for it to be. And if you want a world of peace and justice, it is your responsibility. Oh, in the blink of an eye, you are here and then you're gone. There is no time to waste, no. Change the world with your heart song. Remember to play after every storm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Remember to play after every storm. Song. And remember to play after every storm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Remember to play after every storm.
Thanks, guys.